Alrighty, guys and gals, and whoever, however you're identifying today.
I'm a toaster oven.
All right. Well, it's my privilege to introduce Mark Tenick, who's Maryland Shall Issue president. For more than 33 years, Mark Tenick practiced law as an attorney and the appellate staff of the Civil Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. And while the Department of Justice, Mark practiced law almost exclusively in the courts of appeals of the United States and in the Supreme Court of the United States. Mark represented the United States. Mark represented the United States, its agencies, officers, and employees in cases involving a multitude of complex statutory and constitutional questions. That experience includes presenting approximately 100 oral arguments in cases spread over every federal court of appeals in the United States, including the federal circuit courts. Mark is a current active member of the District of Columbia Bar and the Bar of the Supreme Court. After retiring from the Department of Justice on October 31st, 2016, Mark has served as the president of Maryland Shall Issue, a Maryland nonprofit, nonpartisan civil rights advocacy corporation. In that capacity, he has repeatedly given both oral and written testimony before committees of the Maryland General Assembly as a legal expert in federal and state firearms law and the law of self-defense. Mark is a Maryland State Police Certified Handgun Instructor for the Maryland Wear and Carry Permit and the Maryland Handgun Qualification License, as well as a Certified National Rifle Association Range Safety Officer and a National Rifle Association Certified Instructor in Rifle, Pistol, Personal Protection in the Home, and Personal Protection Outside the Home. Mark is a longstanding merit badge counselor for the Boy Scouts of America. Given firearms instructions to scouts in that capacity, Mark is also the proud father of two Eagle Scouts. As president of MSI, Mark has assisted Maryland Council for MSI in the preparation of several lawsuits, including MSI versus Hogan. Can't even sound familiar. Two of them. And then Holberg versus Pope. MSI was also a named plaintiff in Kolb versus Hogan. And Mark has recently passed the out-of-state attorney bar exam in Maryland and will become a member of the Maryland Bar in June. As a member of the Maryland Bar, he intends to practice law as counsel for MSI and its members in proceedings before Maryland administrative bodies, as well as in proceedings before the Maryland trial court and appellate courts. And in proceedings in the United States District Court for the District of Maryland, in the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, and in the Supreme Court of the United States. So I give you, without further ado, Mark.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here because so much of my personal philosophy and that of Maryland Shall Issue is aligned with the ideals and outlook of the Libertarian Party. Because our principal focus is on the personal duty and rights of individuals, as individuals, to protect themselves and their families with armed force. And that is something that's the core value with Maryland Shall Issue, but I think it is a core value as well with the Libertarian Party because it focuses the attention on personal responsibility of individuals to take care of their own self-defense needs and that of their families, rather than relying on the state to do this for them. And we all know, if you have any familiarity with what's happening in Baltimore and other parts of Maryland, how well the state is actually protecting people. Just to say, not very well at all. Well, if I sound like a lawyer, let me apologize. I've been a lawyer for 40-some years. I can't help it at this point. So it's kind of ingrained in my DNA. But I wanted to speak to you tonight about how important it is for the Libertarian Party to participate in the Maryland General Assembly and local politics in Maryland. Because the General Assembly is, in a word, hopeless. In terms of how it's dominated by those who simply do not believe in the slightest iota in the rights of individuals to take care of themselves and the rights of individuals to protect themselves and their families from the predations of the predators that are so prevalent in parts of America. So my sense, having testified for years now before the Maryland General Assembly on legislation, and is that they simply view armed self-defense as an anathema. fact that gun ownership is an anathema. They simply do not want people to own firearms of any type, and they will create as many legal traps and pitfalls for gun owners as they possibly can. Maryland General Assembly's favorite occupation is to criminalize gun ownership. And do so in ways that are extremely vague. For example, you have a right under the Constitution of the United States, as declared by the Supreme Court, to actually buy a handgun. Well, who here owns a handgun? Anybody want to? Oh, wait. Who here has a carry permit? There you go. Less than one? Oh, one!
In Virginia.
In Virginia. Okay, well, everybody has one in Virginia because it's a shell issue. 42 states. The United States and the District of Columbia are shell issue jurisdictions, which means that you can walk into the state and get a carry permit by satisfying objective criteria, like, are you over 21? Do you have the required amount of training? Are you a criminal? Or otherwise a disqualified person? Okay, if you're not, if you satisfy those criteria, they hand you one. I got a Pennsylvania permit. And unless they win. Virginia takes a little longer for non-residents. It took them 6 months to get around to it. But there is a whole host of very good reasons to have carry permits in this country, because carrying firearms is intrinsically illegal in parts of this state and in parts of the Northeast. For example, if you wanted to travel from Maryland, where it was legal for you to carry a handgun at home, and you wanted to go to Vermont, where there's constitutional carry, anybody can carry. If you cross the great state of New York, you're committing a felony unless you carry it in precisely the right way under federal law. And who here knows what precisely the right way is? Only one. And there's a good reason for that, because it's obscure. But I'll tell you one thing for sure, the New York State Troopers don't know. So they will make the arrest, and you're going to have to file a counsel to get yourself out of it. So Maryland has a whole host of laws that are designed to trap you, much like that statute itself. And we try to bring across to the General Assembly that what they're doing here is impeding constitutional rights, but also impeding the right of self-defense for people. It's a tough hold. So we play defense, and I would love to have more members of the Libertarian Party to play defense with me. Because defense is, if you do this, here's what's going to happen. We're going to have to sue you in federal courts. Now, the federal courts in Maryland are very hostile to the idea, because members of the federal judiciary in Maryland are uniformly appointed by the Democratic presidents. And we don't have a whole lot of purchase there. So then we have to go to the Fourth Circuit, where we are now in some cases. And from there to the Supreme Court. Our only hope in this is the Supreme Court will soon issue a decision in, of course, the Second Amendment case that they recently granted in January. And that has to do with the New York City case. Where New York City said, and free state of New York, if you wanted to have a handgun in your home, you have to get a license to have it. And they issue that license, it's, you know, you're entitled to that under the Constitution, so they issue that license very slowly, but eventually you get one. But if you get one in New York City, you have to pay a $340 a year fee to keep it. But you also can only carry it to a range, one of seven ranges in the city of New York. 8.5 million people, there are seven rangers. Almost all of them are private rangers, which means you have to become a member of the range and pay their dues. But you may not transport it anywhere else, in the city or outside the city. So the case is New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus New York City. And the challenge there is that by banning you from carrying your lawfully possessed handgun across the river to New Jersey to go to a range, or outside the city of New York to take it to another home, or to anywhere out a range outside, or to a competition in the country, you're basically prohibiting the exercise of your constitutional right. And the Second Circuit, because it is also hostile to the right, sustained it. The court took it, and they took it to reverse. Now, New York City knows that, of course. Everybody knows that. So they're trying to move it out by saying, oh, let's drop our law, we can't. And it's going to be interesting whether or not they in fact, allow the case to be moved out if New York City changes their statute to actually give planes all of the relief. But it's not going to work because right now there's a whole host of cases in the pipeline in the Supreme Court. And the pipeline is very interesting because it covers statutes that require micro-stamping. You may hear know what micro-stamping is. This is a great case. California says you cannot sell a pistol in this great state of California unless the pistol does micro-stamping, which means on two places on a brass piece of cartridge, it must impart the caliber and the serial number of the handgun. Now, think about this. A 9mm round is roughly 30,000 pounds per square inch of pressure when it goes off inside the chamber. It pretty much obliterates everything on the surface of the casing, especially a soft metal like brass. So no manufacturer has been able to do it. And as a result, the number of handguns that are permitted to be sold in California has dropped in half as they stopped manufacturing old handguns and introduced new ones. So it's gone from over 1,000 to only about 500, and it will continue to drop. And that's okay, according to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California. Because, after all, it's still by one. So that case is for the Supreme Court. Another case is a case called Rogers, which challenges the New Jersey carry permit, which, like Maryland, requires good cause. Can't get a carry permit in Maryland unless you show that a good and substantial reason to have to carry outside the home. Now, there's only a few places you can carry your blood. To the range, to dog training, to your business, to the gunsmith for repair. But if you take your handgun and you go across the street to your neighbor to show off your new acquisition, that's prohibited. Who knew that? Okay. Two. But most people assume that I could just go across the store next door and show off my new acquisition. That's prohibited carry. You left your home. You didn't go to one of the allowed places because Maryland way right said every place is banned. Carry and transport is completely banned as a default rule, and then you have exceptions. One of the exceptions is between residences or in your residence or on your property, and these other listed places like the bank. And by the way, you should be prepared to prove that you're going to one of these places, because if you fail on that proof, it's 3 years in prison. Minimum 30 days. And it doesn't matter whether or not they actually sentence you to that kind of sentence, because a mere conviction will make you disqualified for life in the federal and state law for ever possessing that any firearm or any modern ammunition for the rest of your life. Gotcha. Now, one of the provisions, for example, to illustrate the trap, is that a collector, a bona fide collector, may travel with his handgun to show off his handgun. Guess what? Bona fide collectors are nowhere to find. No case law, no definition in the statute, and how do you convince the officer on the side of the road that, in fact, you're a bona fide collector? Well, good luck. The burden's on you. So they can get you so many ways in Maryland, because the assumption is that whatever you're doing has to be banned because you're obviously carrying a gun. That's bad. Now, I live in Montgomery County, which is kind of the heart of the beast. Where I live in Chevy Chase, they ban firing a toy bull and arrow in your backyard or anywhere else. Bull and arrow. Or BB gun, or any kind of projectile, because after all, it might hit your neighbor's fence. So that's the kind of mindset that pervades the General Assembly. And you doubt this because until you've actually experienced this with Maryland State Police, that not very far from here on Interstate 7, they arrested an individual who had a carry permit. Believe it or not, he was one of less than 0.5% of Maryland adults have a carry permit. But he had one, and it was unrestricted. He's still arrested. Why, you say? Well, because we don't like guns. So that's the mindset. So if you have firearms, you're a suspect. You're a true minority class. And think about that in terms of the exercise of your individual rights as a libertarian idea. Individual rights protection. You don't have it, really. Because if you make use of the firearm to actually do that, to protect yourself, then you can expect to be charged. In Hagerstown this last summer, there was an individual who had a restricted carry permit. He was a bails bondsman, so he was restricted to while acting as a bails bondsman. So he actually stopped an armed attack with a knife on the streets of Hagerstown. Hagerstown's a kind of dangerous place. You've got all these prisons, they get out and they just stay in Hagerstown. So he stopped his armed attack with a knife. Who did they arrest? Not the armed attacker. Him. Why? Because they said he was outside his restrictions on his carry permit because he wasn't acting as a bails bondsman at the time. Think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
It's okay to use force to stop the knife attack. He wasn't charged with anything for that. But you use your firearm because you're outside your restrictions, you go to jail for 3 months. He couldn't work for 3 months before they dropped those charges. Basically, impoverished himself. And I will tell you that you have to hire counsel. My brother, I'm that chief. So if you get arrested for carrying a gun, you can be assured that you're going to be out thousands of dollars in attorney's fees every minimum, and maybe a lot more. And glory to the effort, actually, hire it. And I hope you're all insured well and are very wealthy, because that's going to cost you $100,000 right there. So think about that in terms of your inherent right of self-defense, the individual right of self-defense. That we, everybody has, even Democrats have that right. So, and you convince people of that, says, well, I don't want to have a gun. Why should I have a gun? Because what if somebody comes to your front door who brings you a gun? Who are you going to call and who do you expect to be there? And in talking to members of the General Assembly about the realities of the street, now the Department of Justice has a lot of street realities, and it's not very good. You don't have the option of calling them and telling them the intruder, please wait for the police to arrive. They don't wait. And what do you do in the meantime, other than become the next victim? And on the street, do you have that option? Well, of course not. They get there in time to put the tape around the crime scene and get chalk on the sidewalk. But none of that matters, because the mindset here in the General Assembly and elsewhere is that you can't use force to defend yourself. It's illegitimate for you to employ that self-defense right. Now, we think, now let me show this issue, that's insane. We have this discussion at the Minimum General Assembly about schools. Now, I have 5 kids, 3 sick kids, 2 of my own, all went through the public school systems of Maryland. I will tell you, none of those schools are protected against this attack. Because at the time the police arrive, it only takes a few minutes to have had it. So if you plead with them, bills come up every single year to allow people within the schools to be armed. Because there is no opportunity to stop an attack if you're not armed at the time. I think of the park lane where this courageous coach stood in the way of the shooter to protect the kids of his community. He was gunned down. Because he lacked the means to protect himself. The courageous teacher in Connecticut, who stood behind him and Alan Lanza, he was gunned down. There's no opportunity to actually have force. You don't have the luxury of minutes to wait. You can kill lots and lots of people in a very short period of time, in 5 minutes. Who wants to protect the kids? Well, it's not the General Assembly. 27 states allow teachers to be armed. 27. There is free training in by Ohio, for example, faster, that will actually give training free to teachers in this country, including paying them all their expenses. No. The answer is, we won't even allow armed police officers to be on campus in Baltimore. So if you're a police officer, you may not go into a school in Baltimore if you are armed. unless you're there on official duties, but even then, they don't want you to be armed. Now, armed police officers statewide may not go into a school unless he's a parent. But only then, if he's concealed and he's wearing his credentials, only then is he allowed to be there, and only as long as his the duty is taken there, or he has a parental reason to be there. Now, this is insane. For the longest time, we would be asked to think the General Assembly wanted to ban firearms of all sorts on college campuses for adults. And they wanted to ban not just for students, they're already bad under the local rules, college rules, but they wanted to ban not only the teachers, but the staff, anybody else that lived on campus, adult students, or any student housing. All of them were simply said, you may not be armed in any way whatsoever. And we said, why? We would take the college president. Their initial bill was to extend the ban on knives in elementary schools to college campuses. And we said, well, what are they going to use it to spread their peanut butter with? And they said, well, maybe we can't ban knives. Because it became a obvious decision. They said, well, we can ban firearms. And for every year, we said, this doesn't make any sense. Now, they've given that up. So we play defense once again. We expect relief from the Supreme Court. Because in this New York City transport case, what's going to be before the court is a standard of review. In legal talk, the standard of review is, what legal standard do we apply to determine the constitutionality of a given restriction on the Second Amendment right? Because if you look at the history of the Second Amendment, and you look at the history of English law and the long Second Amendment at the time of the founding, the evidence is overwhelming that it was carrying arms, including firearms, was the norm. States at the founding required carrying arms in many circumstances, including places like church, because it was part of the expectation that you would expect to be protecting yourself. You can't protect your immunity unless you're in a position to protect yourself. But that is an anathema to our supreme leaders in the General Assembly. So we have a huge task before us in the General Assembly, which I would love to have your support on. And that is talking sense to your elected officials and indeed running for office and becoming a sensible elected official. Because the party discipline in the General Assembly is really quite remarkable on the Democrats. Even if you find individuals who are actually sympathetic to your views, who actually listen to sense and law and logic and reason, they won't vote your way. Yes, sir?
Are you willing to take questions now, or do you prefer...
I would love to have questions. Please do.
I know this is a foresight, but with the passing of Mr. Bush and the soon-to-be passing of Mr. Miller, do you think there will be a significant erosion in that party discipline of the Democrats?
That's a very good question. So there were three candidates, Jones, Davis, and McIntosh. Jones was the Speaker pro tem. She folded her tent and cast her support to Davis. There, Davis is black and a PG County. McIntosh is a white gay woman out of Baltimore City. Okay, this is kind of like the social justice warrior's nightmare. So who do you vote for, right? I mean, you have on one hand a black guy from Davis, Mr. Davis, Delegate Davis, who is actually making noises that he would want to be Speaker of everybody. Right? The Speaker's never been Speaker of everybody in Maryland. He's the Speaker of the Democrats. The Democrats have an overwhelming majority in the General Assembly. They can vote to override at any time and do, as a matter of course. So then you have McIntosh, who's far harder left than even Davis is, ironically. So she appeals to a different demographic. I don't know how this is going to go out, but it has some interesting applications. The Republicans, God bless them, are saying, we're going to vote as a bloc. Pretty good party discipline among the Republicans, too. We're going to vote as a bloc to sway this election so as to make the Speaker, if they rely on us, somewhat beholden on us. The Republicans in the House are about as powerless as you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, truly, it's a joke, because they can do whatever they want, and they're just a joke. They sit on committees, their views are ignored. The only thing that works in General Assembly is to throw them a lawsuit, or a lawsuit. Even that is a pale threat, because it takes a long time to get a seizure. So how this is going to work is going to be very interesting, because what the Democrats don't want to do is be beholden to the Republicans, but at the same time, they don't want to also be casting their votes in a way that, how do I say this gently? There's a racial politics at issue here, because we have a black candidate and we have a white candidate. And the social justice warriors are generally far left, but not so much among the black delegates. Some of whom are relatively sensible in terms of their underlying policies. There is a schism here in the Democratic Party now. And how that is going to play out is going to be very interesting. I wish I could answer the question with a prediction.
Your knowledge of working in the belly of the beast, if you will.
The belly of the beast is a good way to look at it. It will be who's going to be elected is going to have the power that Bush had. Because he ran the House pretty much any way he wanted. Remember what the Speaker has. It's enormous power. He gets to appoint the committee chair. He gets to determine who sits on which committee. Yes, sir.
So if that's not going to change, why would the dynamics change?
Because there's a lot of personalities at play in the House. Bush was able to, by virtue of his standing, to basically sweep the personalities aside and say, we're going to have it this way, and that's the way the chairman did. And everyone understands how you got the speaker at your great peril. Those dynamics have a lot to do with the personal power of the speaker himself. And if he's split the party, in other words, if he's beholden to the Republicans for being it, he's not going to have that same kind of personal power. And this is a lot of informal power. There's a lot of formal power, committee chairs. Committee chairs are enormously powerful because they can take a bill, they have to have a hearing if it's filed by a certain day, but then they put it in the desk and forget about it. They don't have to have a vote on it within the committee. It doesn't ever have to see the light of day again, and that happens all the time as my guest brought. And that's what we strive for in these terrible bills, to the committee chair, not to bring them up to a vote. But they have votes too. So how that's going to play in the General Assembly now is going to be interesting, because for the first time we have a schism in the Democratic Party. A big schism, and they're trying to paper it over, but you can hear the underlying problems when you read the newspapers, particularly the Baltimore Sun, which is a real rag.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't know how it's going to play, but then no one is going to be as powerful as Bush was. Yes, sir.
Suppose we go to the extreme and say, everybody's going to, anybody wants it, well, they recruit people and say, here's your gun from it, and just to say, start carrying. And, I mean, are tens of thousands of people all of a sudden really want to be back in heat right now? I mean, I think Baltimore City is kind of a unique dynamic. The whole state is, there's one criminalization of everything down there. So, I mean, I don't see the death rate going down. I mean, like we had everybody carrying, because people say are honest, law-abiding citizens, probably not going to go anywhere near there, or they're not going to be getting a drug deal, which basically you want to get killed in Baltimore City dealing drugs. So, I mean, unless you like the Baltimore City police corruption where you got lots of money, they come after you and steal themselves.
The estimates on the yearly use of guns for defensive purposes, which means includes purposes for which the gun wasn't fired, goes from CDC, disease control estimates at least 400,000 times a year. Another estimate range up to 2.5 million times a year.
Nationwide, right?
Nationwide. Okay, that's far more, by the way, than what guns are used to actually kill people. That's like 12,000 times a year for murders and suicides. So you have defensive uses of firearms will now be available for the very first time within the city of Baltimore. By the way, with the exception of one person I know, Mr. Danny, over here, there's nobody in the city of Baltimore that I know actually in every issue of the city a carry permit. Because the Maryland State Police ensure that it doesn't happen. It's racial discrimination is the most least strong. So the presumption is that you don't get it, and if you're from the city of Baltimore, you really don't get it. So we don't want you defending yourself in the city of Baltimore. But I'm assuming that, by the way, that the incidents of actual killings for people called innocent people who are killed, who would be permitted to carry, would go down, because there was a very recent video I saw there on YouTube, and Danny Brown and others sent it to me, where a delivery person was being attacked on the streets of Baltimore at night, and he defended himself with a firearm and stopped the attack cold.
Okay, let me interject. I don't disagree with that occurrence, but when you listen to it, Baltimore City now says, John Smith, was killed last night, blah, blah, blah. He probably has a rap sheet, and then later on when someone gets, arrested for, not convicted, but at least arrested for a killing, that guy has another rap sheet. That it's just one criminal after another,
That's a lot of it, but it's not all of it. And by the way, why that is occurring? Because there is a statute in Maryland, the Public Safety Act 5-133, look it up, which says that if you have been a disqualified person because you've committed a crime in the past, and you cannot have a handgun, you cannot have a long gun, but you can't have a handgun, and if you're caught with a handgun, it's a 5-year minimum. Ask me how often that crime is actually charged in Maryland, in Baltimore. Ask me how many times it actually goes to conviction. Practically zero. Because under the state's attorney, who has a complete discretion on what charges to bring, those charges are not brought and they're dropped. So the very statute that was designed to take people off the street under existing law has been on the books forever. It's not enforced. What would that do to people who are using, in your situation, bad people who are using guns to kill other bad people? Well, they would be in prison instead. Now, the prisons are corrupt, too. By the way, Maryland is, I hate to say this because I live in Maryland, is basically one of the most corrupt states in the union. So, including apparently, well, yes, sir.
Regarding the General Assembly and lobbying, are there ways to influence some of these people? I'm sure most of the Democrats in your area you can persuade. Are there some Democrats that can be persuaded?
Yes.
People like Klausmeier, people of Lafferty, these people.
Yes.
And number two numbers make a difference if you go up and show up.
Yes. All of the above. And you know how you make a difference? You make campaign resolutions. They get you the door. It's the same old purchase of access that is true on every single level in the government of all governments. You purchase access. You use it with a campaign gun. That gets you through the door, particularly to say, and it doesn't matter if it's even your own delegate. If you make $1,000 campaign contribution, they're going to honor an appointment with you. And that's reality. Now, the Democrats are not all social justice workers. There's a lot of moderate Democrats in this General Assembly who will listen to reason. But they won't buck the speaker. They won't buck the leadership to vote independently. Now, for example, Klausmeier is the chairman of the Rules Committee. Well, she sits in the Senate. She killed some bills because she didn't like them, because he never got out of rules. So in Maryland, the way it works, if you don't pass it in your own house, the bill by a certain date, it's called the crossover date, if you pass it after that point, it goes to the Rules Committee, the office and chamber, for assignment to another committee. If the Rules Committee chairman doesn't want it to see the light of day, she buries it. Horrible, right?
Would you say that vote owners were better off with Klausmeier being kneeling because of her position in the state senate?
Yes. Well, we'd be better off if the Republicans held the majority or the Libertarians held the majority.
In light of the makeup, for sure.
But she's not going to buck the Speaker of the President of the Senate.
Excuse me. Yeah, I work for a growth commission in Baltimore City, and first of all, people will be amazed at how little time people repeat gun criminals receive it.
Well, they practically don't have it all.
Exactly.
Right.
And secondly, if you could tell us, For instance, there was a threat made against the parole commission. A number of people put in firearms. Nobody got one, except a former state senator made a phone call and had his permit that day.
Difference between
how they treat the politicians and the rest of us.
Oh, that's easy. The politicians get what they want, the rest of us don't.
Exactly.
It's very, very difficult to get a permit out of the United States police because the process is inherently arbitrary.
Right.
Good substantial reason is pretty much what the state police want to be in any given case.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you're a politician,
then especially if you're an existing politician.
Right.
Because even they still have to do the training, which is pretty onerous now, 16 hours. By the way, I teach that course, but it's 2 days, and it's solid. There's a lot to learn. So it's very demanding. You still have to do that, but the politicians get it. They at least get the permit.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that politicians get a permit that was unrestricted for the asking. The Tennessee police have, under the influence of the general attorney general, who's very young, I think it's Attorney General Frosch, have cut that back a little bit. But it's still, the politicians get permits.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, sir.
Hi, I'm from Baltimore City, and very much the belly of the beast. And one thing that I have read occasionally is claims that people have to buy guns on the black market in order to defend themselves.
It's true.
As claims that's why some kids bring their guns to school when they're not supposed to, because it's too dangerous to walk the streets without them. Do you have any estimates for how many? How much of the gun black market is for purposes of self-protection?
The estimates are guesses because, of course, they're all in the black market, so nobody knows for sure. But the estimates that people buy illegal guns on the black market for self-protection is very high. Awful lot of people in Baltimore carry illegally simply for that purpose. A lot of guns are brought to school for that purpose. Not because of their gangs, but because they fear the gangs. A lot of people will walk in Baltimore. I mean, I had a psychologist that I knew as a personal friend that lived outside of Baltimore near Towson. Very well-educated man, a very prosperous man. He would not go into the city of Baltimore without his handgun, and he did not have a permit. And he said, I don't care, because I'm not going to go down there. And he had to use it any number of times to defend himself. He didn't have to fire, because the display was enough. But I got to tell you, if you're going to pull it, you've got to be prepared to use it, because, if you're not willing to use it, you're going to have it taken away from you. So there's a whole course that I teach on when you can pull and when you can't, and that's going to be on the confines of this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that people need to think about, because you will be, if you have to fire that firearm, you will be charged on the streets, absolutely. And if you're self-defense is not going to be sufficient reason for that discharge if you don't care. Yes, sir.
For someone who has a clean record, like that situation with the gentleman you were just discussing, if he were to be charged, what would typically be, for the first time using that weapon illegally, what would be the typical charge?
A violation of the criminal law section 4-203 A and B that will cover you carrying in the vehicle if you're on a vehicle and carrying any person if you're not in the vehicle, or if you're carrying in a vehicle if you call it A and B. So those charges are 3 years, and those charges would be brought, and they are brought all the time. And you can expect probation before judgment, perhaps, if you've got a clean record. You're just maybe a suspended sentence. You might be able to get away with not having a conviction, but more likely than not, you get some conviction of some sort. People
have where you're caught with it.
Because everything's banned. There are higher sentences if you're on school grounds, school property, than if you're not. So that's a more severe sentence, and that's maybe look with that with more scones. So you have to, that part of this, but if you're just on the street, you're likely to be charged, and certainly you'll forfeit your car. So my carry piece is worth $2,500. I don't want to have mine forfeited.
Okay.
My carry piece is $2,500, so I don't want to have it forfeited.
Can you feel it, Tony?
Can you tell it?
No! So, here's the thing. You know, I tell this to my class. People ask me if you're on retake. I don't answer that question because there's a good reason not to answer that question. The bad guy picks the time, place, and circumstances of the attack every single time. He picks the victim. He picks the where and how it's going to take place. The only possible thing you have in your repertoire, if you will, is surprise. So if everybody knows you carry, then you just eliminate the surprise. If he knows you carry, he's more likely to shoot you than threaten you. So don't tell people you're carrying. That's crazy. Carry in such a way that nobody can tell. Now, if you look at me right now, no one can tell that I'm carrying whether or not I'm carrying. And that's a good thing. Because you don't want to tell people you're carrying. It's just dumb. So that's what I teach in the course. So take my course. This really... So everybody should have this right, by the way. 12% of the adult population, over a million people in Pennsylvania, have carry permits. 8% of the adult population in Virginia have carry permits. There are roughly 17 million carry permits in the United States. Guess what? Blood has it running the streets everywhere, or anywhere. And they're used all the time for legitimate self-defense purposes. All the time. 2.5 million times a year. A year! That's 2.5 million victims that aren't victims. And you compare that, that vastly exceeds the number of actual crimes. So what does the Maryland General Assembly want to do? Well, let's make it impossible for people to transfer on a private sale one gun, ordinary hunting rifles or shotguns, goose guns. So already you can't do a private sale in Maryland without going through the state police. If I want to sell my handgun to you, well, we have to go to the state police, and we have to do, fill out a form, and I have to wait 7 days. You have to wait 7 days, and we'll do a background check on you. And if you're clear, after 7 days, I can then sell. Long guns, traditionally, since the founding, have been traded swapping back and forth among people like candy. In the rural parts of Maryland and other parts of the country, that's just as common as rain. So what do they want to do? We'll make it a 3-year prison sentence if you do that. Make you everyone who does that a criminal. Now, I will tell you that most ordinary people in this state do not pay attention to what happens in the General Assembly. 90% of the people will not have any idea that that has now become criminal, a thing we've been doing for 200 years since we voted. So what do they have? Well, they get charged. Because it's more than 2 years, and this means more punishable by more than 2 years in prison, they now become a disqualified person for life. It doesn't matter how long you get here. It's just people punishable. In other words, could they punish you by that? If they're not going to be punished by that, probably the charges will get down to maybe a probation. Well, doesn't matter. And then, if you're caught with a firearm, or modern ammunition, 22 caliber rimfire, modern ammunition, that's a 10-year felony under federal law. 5-year felony under misdemeanor under state law. Yes, ma'am.
We have about 5 minutes before you take it.
Okay. I love these questions, by the way. This is great. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to invite you to address the case of Philando Castile. And I mention it for two reasons. As the previous speaker noted, there are a disproportionate number of white people in this room. And the second reason is that Castile was shot by a police officer during a traffic stop when Castile informed him that he had a permit to carry a gun.
Yep. Minnesota.
And subsequently, the NRA did not comment on the case, outrageously in my opinion, that's why I'm not renewing my membership in the NRA, on the grounds that he had marijuana or may have had marijuana in the car. There are people in this room who use marijuana. I'm not one of them. But I don't want them to be denied their right to carry arms on those grounds, let alone that they should be shot dead.
So here's the problem with the Castile case. I know the case. It's in Minnesota. Mr. Castile made some very fundamental mistakes as a practical matter, not legal. He made a fundamental mistake because once the officer knows you're armed, you become a threat at that point. Because the most dangerous situation the officer faces on a daily basis is stopping a car on the side of the road. So once he knows you're armed, you become someone who's about to shoot him, as far as he's concerned. So when Mr. Castillo reached over without telling the officer he was going to into his glove compartment to get his permit out of the glove compartment, the officer thought he was reaching for his gun, and every officer, and most officers at least, will shoot you when you do that.
The officer had just asked him for his driver's license. Reaching for his driver's license.
So the cops are scared. I have nothing against cops. My son's a cop. I represented cops, some FBI agents and DA agents and all these federal law enforcement for 33 years at the Department of Justice. I know how they think. And they, self-preservation is their first rule of law. In fact, it's controlling law. You're shaking your head.
Yes.
That's the street reality. So if you're carrying a handgun on your person, you don't want to do anything that the officer has not permitted you to do expressly. So that's the problem with happened to Mr. Christie.
And a request to show me driver's license?
You said, officer, I got my hands on the wheel. Officer, I'm going to reach into the glove compartment and get my driver's license. Is that okay with you? Yeah. Where's your gun? Well, it's on my right hip. Okay, don't touch it. Okay, no problem. I'm going to now reach over to the glove compartment. Now, in Maryland, if you have a carry permit, you're not obligated to tell the officer that you have the gun when he stops you on the side of the road. Some states are different, by the way. You have to state-by-state law on this. But if he sees that you have the gun, like you're stupidly printing or your coat flies open and he sees the gun, you're going to be looking down the end of the 9mm pistol on the wrong end because you become a threat at that point. Very dangerous, right? You don't want to be in that position. But of course, if you tell the officer that you're carrying and you have a restricted permit, you can expect to be on the side of the road for hours and perhaps to be arrested because he's going to say, you're carrying outside your restrictions. 2 years of jail. Carrying outside restrictions, by the way, is the same thing as carrying without a permit at all, as far as they're concerned. So, of course, they're going to ask you, how are you within your restrictions? So you have a dilemma there. So you tell him or not? You end up like Mr. Castillo if you make a false move. That's the problem. Yes.
Is that information, if you have any type of carry permit, is that in the state police database? Can they hold it when they pull up your license?
No. Virginia's different, by the way. They associate your driver's license and your car with that, but not Maryland.
That's right.
Don't give them any ideas.
It's not a problem for them because so few people have permits. Overwhelming number of people with permits are security guards. Yes,
ma'am. Okay. Hopefully, hypothetical question. Suppose a person finds an intruder in their home and they shoot them dead with a shotgun that was purchased prior to the need to register it. What happens to the person?
Okay, well, just a second. There's no need to register a shotgun right now, so that bill failed. So you could purchase it by FFL, they'll do a background check, you could buy a shotgun, and if you shoot him dead, then you better be willing to call your lawyer right away after you do certain things that establishes every element of the law under the law of self-defense. I was in imminent danger of my life was being threatened or a severe bodily harm. I recently thought that this person was a threat to me under those terms. My subjective belief was in fact reasonable, and I used no more force than I had to, and I was not the aggressor. So those are the elements of the complete defense of self-defense in Maryland. In your home, and you meet all those, you're probably okay, but you'd be damn cool if you didn't call your lawyer out. And both the Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights in the process. The Sixth Amendment right is especially important, that's your right to counsel. If they violate that, nothing you say after that point is a misuse. Sure.
Much of what you spoke about today about gun laws, to me, is directly correlated to the laws against drug prohibition. I see a lot of crimes being committed in Baltimore City have to do with the black sale of illegal drugs.
Yes, but you know why? It's really dangerous to sell drugs.
Right.
Because people shoot you.
Well, I know that, I'm sure that shall issue doesn't have an official stance on legalization of narcotics or any sort of drugs. I was just wondering what your personal position was on the drug war.
Well, look, I've been on both sides of that question. Drugs are a scourge, and the purchase and sale of really bad drugs are at
home. You mean the prescription drugs that are
no, not
American?
Some of that certainly is there. The illegal drugs are a problem, too. Whether or not it should be criminalized is a different question. You could probably eliminate much of this if you decriminalized it and just regulated it. But there's no doubt, I've seen the worst things you can imagine on what happens with drugs. So it's not a Maryland show issue position on this because we're a single issue organization. But I have a real problem with allowing the free sale of all kinds of drugs to everybody who wants them on an open market. And, you know, hell take the hindmost.
Should alcohol then be illegal since it's more dangerous?
Because they tried that and it failed. And obviously what we're doing now is failing as well. So something has to be done. Whether or not it's completely decision is a different question. Marijuana is a classic. Because marijuana, by the way, is a illegal drug under federal law. If you use it, you're a prohibited person under federal law from owning a firearm.
Yeah.
Did that vote pass?
It did not pass in the state, but it wouldn't matter because it's still illegal under federal law.
If the federal ban, then it would be...
It's a... Yeah, states cannot affect the federal ban on any use of marijuana is illegal under federal law. Any at all. If you become a prohibited person, you're an illegal user of any of the Schedule I drugs. So that's not, hasn't changed and didn't change this year. Passed the Senate, didn't pass the House.
It did not?
Did not. So you're about to interrupt.
I'm standing.
Okay. So the first issue that is going to be before the General Assembly again, Maryland Hill issue took no position on this other than to inform the legislators. Well, by the way, you can legalize it all you want under state law, and it's fine. But there is this overlay of federal law which you can't touch because it's federal law. And so if you were to buy any firearm now by a federal firearms licensee, you have to fill out a form called 4473. It's an ATF form. And on it, it says, do you use marijuana, even as a medical marijuana user? And if you do, you may not purchase. And if you do lie on that form, it's a 10-year felony as a violation of 18 U.S.C. 922-86. And, yeah, it doesn't require specific intent or mens rea, which the Supreme Court just said so, in case of the red zone. So... it has real practical consequences, the fact that there's a settle of...
So shall issue has no official stance on restricting the inalienable right of individuals to carry if they have abided by
look, illegal drugs. My son's a vet. I know the vets who especially need marijuana to deal with the post-traumatic stress. My heart goes out to them. I don't know a way of fixing the Maryland law without fixing the state federal law. I'd be all for taking marijuana, medical marijuana off the prohibited list. My God, you can carry a gun if you're prescribed opioids.
Yeah.
It's crazy not to have the same treatment for a medical law.
If I could just comment, and I noticed that sometimes medical cannabis is a lot better, you know, for mental health issues than all the dope that the psychiatrists are pushing on their patients. It absolutely turns my stomach anyways to know.
Oh, yeah.
Take it from someone who's been, no, I never served, but I had a mental health crisis almost 3 years ago.
And people like you who want and need prescribed marijuana should have it. And you shouldn't have to suffer the loss of your gun rights because of it. And that's a you can say that all you want, but until they take it off Schedule I of the Controlled Substances Act, that's not happening. And I wish the state bill would pass. I wish the Attorney General and HHS would take it off Schedule I. They have the power to do that, by the way. They're not going to, but they do have the power. Congress could do it tomorrow. Because Congress wrote it into that bill in the first place, and control substances on it. So I'd be all favor of that. Any yeah, I grew up in the 60s, you know. I meant not saying what I had to, but I had security clearance. If I have a security permit, it's because I kept the very, very, very bad people in Gitmo who belong in Gitmo. And I've been so publicly in court violence. So that was enough for the state police to say, golly, maybe he's on the target of the hit list. And I may well be. So state police will at least listen to that. Of course, I'm not from Baltimore either.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Sorry to cut you off.
No,
but we do.
Please join Maryland Shoeish. We need you. MarylandShoeish.org on the web. I'm going to leave my business cards up on the counter up there. Please feel free to call me or send me an email, my email address, my personal cell phone on that. So if you have questions, please contact us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll take a brief break, right, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll take a brief break, and then Bob's going to take over and we'll start the central committee meeting.